SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Friday. Race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201. Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. The weekend upon us, and certainly the holiday weekend. Ooh, that reminds me. I got to check in with Johnny. Johnny, holiday Mondays. Johnny might be iffy. He always seems to have. There must be like a series of barbecues that Johnny and Gail go to on holiday Mondays, Memorial Day, Labor Day, and the like. They must start at like 9:30 in the morning. There must be some breakfast barbecues. Right. We'll check. We got to check with Nick Tamaro too. Usually we do Monday holiday handicapping with Nick, and looking forward to the way the Monday holiday cards are drawn later today. Meanwhile, there is really good action tomorrow. If you haven't had a chance to look ahead, we talked a little bit about Santa Anita with Tom Quigley yesterday. We'll check in with Hammer later. They added a couple more stakes on Sunday, the Desert Stormer, and then they'll have the Monday card too. So a lot going on, and I'll talk about the pick six sequence yesterday, which absolutely was a home run. Ended up paying three times the parlay. Crazy. We'll talk about it in a sec. The rest of the action, Monmouth, we'll talk to Frank Miramati. Tremendous. Coming off of a great winter where he spent some time in New York and already in midsummer form at Oceanport with Frank, most notably having fun with the Cuckoo for Coconuts. That was pretty fun if you didn't see that call. And it's funny, Frank knows when to have some fun and when to be more serious, more focused on the gravitas of the situation. And certainly that was a good spot the other day, if you didn't see that call. Meanwhile, in addition to all we'll do today, and that'll include catching up with Pete Fornatale. We'll catch Pete right at 9:15. And we got to try to keep the train on the tracks today, as it happens. The rest of the lineup, Pat Cummings, who we didn't get to yesterday because we were stacked up from Wednesday. So we'll check in with Pete and with Pat to start the hour. Marty McGee from Churchill, and Marty was on hand. Marty was on hand this morning, of course, at the Downs when Justify, and not just Justify, the camera, Churchill doing a great job and a great service to players and fans with the video feed daily during the 7:30 to 7:45 training period. Ed DeRosa and Joe Christofek this morning. We'll have Ed in the second hour today. We'll catch up with him. And the Gallup this morning, even in some ways, even better than yesterday's return to the racetrack. Yesterday, you could see a couple of different times that Justify was eager and happy to get out of the stall and get out of the barn. And today, absolute relaxed, controlled power, just around, went a little further. Yesterday, I called it a mile and a half, but I guess it was a mile and three-eighths. Today, he went a little further and pulled up by the track kitchen. And so another day closer. And if you were watching the feed, if you didn't see it this morning live, you can catch it later, catch it at any time, KentuckyDerby.com, and access it through Ed DeRose's feed or through Derby Media, any which way. But there was also a second camera, and that's what's so great about this, and that Churchill presenting this by Twin Spires and Brisnet, having the camera trained on the other horses that are training at Churchill, including Bravazo, who looked very good as well today. He came out of Preakness strong, and he looked very good today. And in fact, his exercise girl keeping him way off the rail, and also pulling hard on the right rein to keep his head away from noticing and getting a sense that that he wanted to drop down and go. So Bravazo out of the Preakness strong as well. And the other news, well, we can save the budding Belmont news for next week. We'll be at Belmont starting on Wednesday, and we'll give you 8 broadcast days leading up to Justify's Triple Crown Try, as we did for American Pharoah as well, and of course so much else to cover, including the Met Mile and all the other great action that's going to come together. And we're starting to track the fields toward Belmont week. Meanwhile, let's talk the news that has become contentious. It's hard to make hard news contentious, but you may have noticed yesterday or heard yesterday, in fact, when I was talking to Steve Haskin and he talked about going his trip next week to Kentucky, and I asked about Ashford and Coolmore and the developing quote-unquote story that was already boiling over yesterday morning, and wasn't going to delve into it without details and without confirmations. And later in the afternoon, Darren Revelle from ESPN, who, if you might recall, also had the initial news of American Pharoah's move and deal when it came to going to Coolmore. And Darren Revelle breaking the Coolmore purchase story on Justify. And the numbers are in the $60 million to $67 million range. The 60, the central figure, and then apparently as much as another $7 million in various kickers. And later in the afternoon, after Revelle releases his story, Winstar came back in the afternoon and said that there's no deal in place, and that they've had all kinds of inquiries, and Coolmore is one of them. Nothing is finalized and won't be in the foreseeable future. Now, it's not necessarily that somebody's right and somebody's wrong in here. The finalization portion could basically be referring to those kickers and the performance enhancers that would be involved in the contract between Coolmore and Winstar. But every indication, including some supporting business portions, including insurance, seemingly have been executed. So Coolmore, with the potential here after Justify's Belmont run, should it be successful, the unique circumstance of standing potentially two Triple Crown winners. And you know, for those that are, you know, wondering why would they do this? Because Scat Daddy's dead. You realize that this is a son of Scat Daddy that has done some things on the main track at distances already that supposedly Scat Daddies couldn't do. This is absolutely in the Coolmore wheelhouse, business-wise. And in terms of the dollars and cents, assuming that they shuttle Justify, which they, you know, they did with Scat Daddy and they do with American Pharoah, the $60 million is a very reasonable number. So there's nothing illogical or insane or the breathy response. Tell Michael it was nothing personal. Strictly business. I always like them. That's for you, Johnny. You can't go too many weeks without Godfather references. And speaking of stallion maneuvers earlier in the week, we'll give my man Joe Bianca, OEY, the Mind Your Biscuits story after an extended flirtation period. Shade Farm in Japan wins the hearts and minds of the Summers family and will go to Japan to stand after his season is over. And he, you know, for those that, again, who are wondering, yeah, he's a son of Posse, and not that Posse isn't, you know, and hasn't been, you know, successful. But he happens to fit well with the breeding program in Japan. And it's very typical for them every so often, the Japanese breeders, to, you know, reach for injections of speed. So Mind Your Biscuits. We should find out. What is Mind Your Biscuits in Japanese? Don't know. We'll find out. It's easy enough on the internet. Translate. It's like Star Trek. Computer, translate. In the meantime, Mind Your Biscuits preparing for a Metropolitan Handicap try. And that field continues to come together. McCracken is coming for that. We got 3-year-old Boldoro, maybe more. You know, for those that are debating the audible situation, that would be advisable, no? What about audible? And that might be a very good spot for audible, frankly. Double-edged attack for the ownership team of Justify and audible. Let's take a break right here. Getting going. Pete Fornatale standing by with the report of the WHT contest. We'll also talk to Philly Joe. That'll be great. We'll catch up with Joe later. But Pete Fornatale kicks it off. Pat Cummings, Marty McGee, so much more. Weekend preview at the Races, Series XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrisNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrisNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrisNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Things in life are free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money. That's what I want. That's what I want. That's what I want.
We're back at the races.
Your
Peter Thomas Fornatal standing by and joining us now back from the triumphant inaugural World Horse Players Tour contest at Santa Anita, and now seemingly taking his show again on the road, because coming to us from Orlando?
Indeed, I channeled my inner NFL quarterback after the success of the inaugural World Horse Players Tour event, Steve, and I literally went to Disney World.
I love it. That's great. And obviously, this has got family time written all over it.
Indeed, so the only slight bummer, we were hoping to get here yesterday in time. I wanted to see Perrin's expression on her face, the first walk through to the Magic Kingdom. Have to work this morning, working on a couple of important pieces. Wanted to chat with you. Got the podcast later. So my return to Disney will be not until this afternoon, but they're over there now, and I've been instructed to get a picture, the face of wonder I'm expecting. Perfect timing in terms of my life. Nice to sort of after the show today, I'll take a little bit of time away from racing, and we'll just do some family stuff down here after the crazy intensity of last week with the four-hour nights of sleep and the dealing with all the various just logistical issues heading into the tournament. But let me say, it exceeded expectations. So great to meet so many folks, many of whom, Steve, know me from the show exclusively. So that was fantastic too, to get to meet a bunch of At the Races listeners. People, as instructed, came up to say hi. Lots of props given to you and this show along the way. It was a real good vibes situation. Players coming in from all over the country to support the event. The group in aggregate on the track playing cards bet over $1 million on the weekend, which was super exciting and the kind of result we were looking for. And the professionalism of the production crew and the drama of the final table and this cast of characters at the final table, if you'd had me pick from a TV point of view who might end up there, I don't think I could have done a better job than reality.
Well, detail it for those that haven't read the piece that summarized everything. Give us the blow by blow, particularly Sunday. And I was, you know, with every race update, I was, you know, sending out a link to the leaderboard, and particularly excited when Philly Joe vaulted up the leaderboard from eighth to fifth to first.
They say you should never gamble against a man who has the same first name as a city, and Philly Joe showed them why at the World Horse Players Tour event, Steve. That story is one of my favorites. But I know he'll be on, so I'll let him talk about his part of the situation. I'll just sort of give the overview of what that complexion of the final table was and why it's going to make such an exciting hour of television. You had everything from a local hero, guy who grew up going to Santa Anita with his grandfather, like Jason Avila. That's going to be a fun story to tell. You have the most successful player in live bankroll history, the sort of overdog and chip leader heading into the final table in Garrett Skiba. You've got a computer player in Tony Joe, the guy who has a Mickelson before he won the big one, like resume at this point, with about half a dozen close calls trying to make good. And maybe my favorite story of all, the one I'm working on right now out of Chicago, 23-year-old Justin Mustari, whose contention ran deep, who said he chose to play in the event precisely because it was going to be on television, and believes that TV video are going to be a medium that we can use to engage younger fans such as himself. It was just it was just an amazing cast. And we got what we wanted in terms of the competition at the final table. We had three leader changes throughout the nine races. We're going to be able to make that play really well on TV. Nick Tamaro, another amazing character who I'm only getting to now. That's how deep and exciting the final table was that I'm only mentioning Nick now. We have him taking the lead early. Some very exciting stuff. And then the format, it's designed to take players out of their comfort zone. You know, when you're talking about TV and making something work on TV, while there are many, many super-duper horse player-friendly aspects to the tournament, what we believe we really need to do to expose this and expose the full excitement to the wider audience is really ratcheting up the drama. And to do that, we have to take players out of their comfort zone. And some have said, oh, well, I'm not sure about this strategy at the end. The bets are so big, it forces players to, you know, worry less about value and more about horses who are likely to win. To me, that's a feature, not a bug, of this format, because you end up getting the most likely winners on a lot of cards, and therefore the horses, even if they don't win, they're the most likely to fire. And that's what's going to create excitement when we show these races. You're going to know going into this last race, you're going to know there are four players left. They each have a different horse, and will I find a way to identify through the commentary and graphics which those are? And you can root for whomever has gotten you the most attention through the whoever you've decided to root for or root against during the hour. And it's all going to play right out there on TV. I think it's I think we accomplished what we wanted to in terms of presenting racing on television, very much along the lines that poker did before the poker boom.
Well, and those were the anticipatory elements that, you know, as you tinkered with the format and developed the concept, you were hoping for, you know, a certain kind of vibe and a you know, a ratcheting of tension, and, you know, just even on a static basis, Pete, you know, seeing the notation with each passing race on Sunday as things were, you know, basically being heightened in terms of, you know, the amount and as, you know, various players were tapping out. I mean, you could sense and then particularly into the finale when, you know, everything was on the line, even though the field had been cut in half by that point.
Yes, And that also, I think, helps in a reality TV kind of way. We didn't know. We've test-driven the format a few times, and sometimes we've had the field intact going into the last, and other times it's winnowed down. This time it winnowed down, and with each player parting, it definitely ratchets up that tension and allows the audience to focus in more tightly on exactly which player has which horse. And I think that's going to be one of the things that makes this really fun going forward. It really exceeded expectations in every respect. And the guys bet a lot of money. We brought these players in from all over the country. They ended up handling over $1 million on the weekend, just on the player cards that we were tracking. So I think the ultimate idea here, of course, is to have something that's a true, it's an overused phrase, but I think there's a world in which this can become a true win-win where tracks are benefiting, players are benefiting. I'm really looking forward to the work that comes next, which is going to be putting this into TV episode form and then sharing it with the world and then subsequently having conversations with potential sponsors and racetracks to really get this thing off the ground. But I feel like whatever this idea was worth going into the weekend, it's worth a lot more coming out of the weekend just because of the way everything played out there at Santa Anita. And I'd be remiss if I didn't take a minute to thank Santa Anita for the tremendous work they did in hosting this event. Rick Hammerly was unbelievable with the racing cards he put together. Nate Newby, of course, and Tom Quigley. Nobody does a better job when it comes to treating the players like VIPs. And that was certainly accomplished this weekend. And also shout out to DRF Tournaments, who did all the qualifying for us, especially Mike Zapin and Mandy Minger. Unbelievably helpful throughout the event. And when you see this on TV, it's, you will see JK and my mugs for a time. But really, Gabby Gaudette and Matt Bernier, unbelievably professional job helping turn my inchoate ideas into stuff that's really going to work on the screen and looking great while doing it. I couldn't be happier, Steve, with how this all turned out.
Very cool. And you know, the reaction from what I can tell from players, and we'll talk to Nick and, as you mentioned, to Joe and get their feedback. The one thing you hope for, of course, in the nightcap is in the final race is a win, you know, a la Bechuk, but that didn't happen, and that's okay. I mean, the same thing happens when we're at NHC too. You can't orchestrate it so that, you know, the winner hits the last race.
I think it's all about how it's presented on TV. Here's my working idea. I think what I'd like to do is use a graphic not unlike the graphics you'll see in a poker hand, where it shows each player's percentage chance of winning. And in horse racing, of course, you have to fudge that a little. It's not as purely mathematical as the chances of turning over a certain card. But the odds board does give you a good line on implied probability. So I almost see like having I'm just making up numbers, I don't remember who had what, but if the 11 wins, Tony bet the 11, if the 11 is 2-1, therefore he has a 33% chance to win, you'll have the three players who each have one horse, and then you'll have Philly Joe, who was the leader, has the implied probability of his horse and all the others, and it's like Philly Joe wins if any of these five horses win. So I think we can set it up in a way where it'll make perfect sense to the audience. Just like depending on which card comes over on the river, a certain player is going to benefit. So I think we can spin that. What I was worried about in the last race was that nobody's horses would fire. I think that would have been a very hard story to tell if they backed four horses who all finished in the back half of the field. But the fact is that three of the four horses backed at the final table fired. So if we can set that up right, no matter who you're rooting for, you're going to have a chance to see your horse flying from the back of the pack, or if you were rooting for Justin Mustari, see your horse on the inside digging in, trying to find more late, and it's going to work perfectly. So there could be a scenario where that gets weird in a future episode. Fortunately, this time around, the drama is everywhere we need it to be. And as a writer, I'm just so excited to see a rough cut and start really getting to work on the voiceover parts of this. Just like a poker show, a lot of this will be done in post, but I've got so many ideas My brain is just brimming and getting ready to sit down and work on this for real in the coming weeks. And we're hopefully going to be able to have it all ready to have a premiere party during sales week at Saratoga, Steve. We'll talk more about that when more details are known.
Well, and I was going to ask, that was my follow-up, was going to be the timing on the execution. So, and then in terms of, marketing or airing, how do you handle that?
I have a feeling it will live, this episode will live online, YouTube, Vimeo, something like that. But we do want to have some events to help generate excitement and just talk about the idea and where we see this going in the future. The first one we're talking about doing, Fasig Tipton have been talking to us about allowing us to use the pavilion on Wednesday of sales week. So, I mean, to me, that's perfect timing because obviously the whole industry is focused on Saratoga for Monday and Tuesday for the sales. And then the contest world is focused on the Saratoga betting challenges that will be happening that Friday and Saturday. So I'm hoping we can maximize participation on both the industry side and the serious contest player, horse player side that week. We're also hoping to have another event at EquestriCon, obviously a little bit later, but I think this episode will ultimately live on YouTube, and then we'll figure out what's going to happen in terms of this first season. It's going to be all about getting this in front of different networks and trying to structure some sort of deal that makes sense for everybody. And there's going to be so much work to be done. Once the episode exists, that's going to be where we're really looking to continue to rally support. I mentioned sponsors and I mentioned networks. We're also going to be taking our pitch directly to horse players. I'm very serious about that vision of the World Horse Players Tour becoming the Green Bay Packers of tournaments, where the players literally own shares. Those are conversations we'll be having. I need to talk to some accountants and people who understand business better than me to figure out how we're going to do that. But I've recently had some encouraging conversations about the feasibility of that. And I think it'd be great to give horse players a chance to band together and have our voices heard by other forces in the industry in a way where it's very clear what the horse players are bringing to the table and can offer the industry, have a real dialogue and exchange, and really give horse players a voice. That's the ultimate goal here, Steve.
Excellent. Well, a couple of notes going into the weekend, saw your flair about the Monmouth Pick Your Prize contest, which comes up next weekend, and the last chances to qualify there. I want people to know as well that at horseplayers.com there's a free NHC qualifier on Sunday. There's a pick and pray on Sunday this weekend. You know, there's a series of five of these during the course of the year. Three NHC seats are up on Sunday as part of the free qualifier, so be aware of that. What else you got?
Yeah, I should have mentioned, too, as part of his haul for the weekend, Justin Mustari won at that HC seat, which is kind of cool. The big thing is Monmouth, and I'm glad you brought that up because people might not realize this. The unique format of Monmouth requires Brian Skirka and Monmouth not to take walk-up entries. So what that means is if you want to play, you've got to let him know. He told me by the end of the day Saturday. It wouldn't surprise me if you had till the end of this weekend, but it's not like you can call him up next Wednesday and still get your pick your prize seat. If you want seats, you should book them now, certainly by the end of the day on Saturday. We have our last chance qualifier, low price point relatively, $126 to play. One in 23 will advance. And even if you've already purchased two of the Monmouth Pick Your Prize seats, if you then win one, you will be refunded by Monmouth. So go ahead, reserve your two slots, and then go ahead anyway Monday and play in DRFT's last chance qualifier. We also have an opportunity on Monday to win into the two Saratoga handicapping challenges that I mentioned. Once again, Friday, August 10th at Saratoga, a $1,000 buy-in. Saturday, August 11th, it's $2,000. To play in that contest on Monday, you put in $410, and one in 10 will receive a prize package worth $3,500. That includes entries for both days at Saratoga and a $500 travel voucher. Check out the full slate Saturday and Sunday. Lots of feeders, credit builders, matchups, etc. Highlighted events going forward, including the Del Mar Challenge, which will be here before we know it, and even next year's World Championship of Handicapping, a contest that is expected to have $1 million with no takeout in the finals. Lots of opportunities. Check out the full schedule, tournaments.drf.com. No reason not to multi-table, even across platforms, this Memorial Day weekend if you're playing the horses. Lots of cool stuff.
Excellent. Well, Pete, congratulations to you, Jonathan, to everybody involved in making this WHT success, of getting it off the ground. Takes tons of work and coordination and everybody pulling together. We'll head out and enjoy Orlando, and this will, I'm sure, will be fun. Always taking the kidlings on the circuit. Good job.
I still think she might like Saratoga better, even when it's all said and done. She always talks about that too. But you know, Mickey has to have his moment, and that'll be today.
Excellent. Enjoy. Pete Fornatale, everybody. Looms boldly. And, of course, when you're at DRF, the tournaments drop down. All the news, all the information for not just what is going on at WHT and the World Championship of Handicapping, but plenty of other, some of the regional action. And speaking of which, put in a quick hit for the two-day Belmont Stakes betting challenge, which will be Friday and Saturday, Belmont week, and it's a $10,000 buy-in, $2,500 to the prize pool, $7,500 is your bankroll. Win, place, show, exacta, try, quinella, and double wagering, and all the prize money goes right back to the players, and it includes the potential for four NHC seats, two BCB seats, and the winner also gets an automatic entry into the 2019 Belmont Stakes Betting Challenge. So get to Naira.com for all those details. Obviously, you'll also get treated to enjoying the 2 days in stylish comfort. Let's take a break. We've got Marty McGee and Pat Cummings coming up.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't understand the people of the day.
Back at the 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Pat Cummings will join us from Hong Kong after we talk to Marty McGee. And Marty is having, you know, this Triple Crown stuff. It makes Marty have to work even harder than he usually does out there for the drill period, 7:30 to 7:45 for Justify. And not just Justify, because Bravazo out there as well during the special training session being broadcast every morning, 7:20 to 7:45 at KentuckyDerby.com. And Marty out there doing his own camera work, interviewing Jimmy Barnes. Well done, Mart.
That was just kind of impromptu. I mean, Jimmy was just sitting there talking to a couple of people who were petting his pony. So I said that, you know, I'll kill two birds with one stone here, get you on video, and then use it for my little wrap-up that I came home and wrote a little bit later. But, yeah, Justify's doing great out there. He's been out there two mornings now, and I guess Baffert's supposed to get here maybe Saturday night. I don't know if he'd do that. Isn't he running something in the Gold Cup at Santa Anita?
He's got in the Gold Cup, or no, I don't think he's in the Gold Cup, is he? Dr. Door. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that. That's right, Dr. Door.
So I don't know if he'll come on a red eye. I don't know what his deal is, but anyway, it looks like, according to Steve Anderson, Bob spoke to, I don't know if it was an impromptu press conference yesterday or what, but he's still mulling over whether or not he's going to breed him once or twice back here. Now, with American Pharoah, I don't remember this happening, but I'm sure I was there, but he breathed him twice. I think it was real easy, maybe both times, I don't know, but it was like the Memorial Day weekend the first time and then the weekend before the Belmont the second time. So we're looking at, you know, something, if not identical, very similar to the schedule for Justify coming into the Belmont.
Well, we watched yesterday morning, and you could tell that Justify had been pent up a little bit with the days walking the shed row after being sent over Sunday early afternoon and settling in. Today he was really settled and really relaxed. It seemed that Bravazo was more eager today, in fact, of the two. And not only was he eager, his exercise girl had to keep him way off the rail, and she was leaning on the right rein to keep his head away from, you know, diving inside. It looked like Bravazo wanted to break into a rail run.
Yeah, I mean, I caught the tail end of his work, or of his gallop, Stephen, like when they, I guess it was toward the end of Justify's second time around the clubhouse turn, here was looming large to his far outside with Bravazo. The girl did a real good job keeping, you know, nothing. Pat Byrne was kidding me. He said, you're going to have a scoop here. You're going to have the Derby. You're going to have the Preakness 1-2 finishers having their own little match race here in the morning. But luckily that did not come off. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's coming out of the race good. We got four or five. I mean, they're not committing on restoring hope for Baffert. I don't know if he's training right after a Justify or not. But Jimmy's taking one horse out right away after Justify around 7:40. So anyway, we got the Asmussen horse. He's been out there first thing at 7:30 along with Justify and Bravazo. And I'm missing Free Drop Billy. He's supposed to go too. So with Restoring Hope, that would be five horses from here at Churchill being intended for the Belmont. And Dave Grinning, by the way, I don't know if you're talking to Dave or anybody from New York, but Audible was supposed to work this morning, but he did not. And Dave intimated on DRF Live that that's yet another indication that a start is unlikely for Audible and the Belmont. You know, I was talking to Kate and Bradar this morning as we were waiting on Justify, and she said, we both agreed you wouldn't want to be Elliot. I mean, it's really a tough call whether or not, you know, what to do in this situation. And it's a pretty unique kind of thing, having what would be the second choice for the Belmont going against your own stablemate. And I had Tim Sullivan of the Courier Journal was asking me about that the other day, and said he actually did some research on when Calumet had some of their Triple Crown horses going for them, and you never saw another Calumet horse surface against them following the you know, when they were alive for a Triple Crown. So I mean, it's pretty understandable if the Elliott and the Windstar and whoever else is involved said, you know, we're going to keep them on the sideline. So I don't be surprised, Steve, if real soon you don't see news about Audible, they're just going to say no to it.
Well, there's a couple of follow-ups to that, and I did bring that out the other morning regarding particularly Coaltown and Citation, when Coaltown was considered the second best horse in that 1948 three-year-old crop and second in the Derby to Citation, and then did not participate in the Preakness or the Belmont. And frankly, this decision may already have been written into the contract with Coolmore. And I understand the whys and wherefores of Windstar, you know, living by what is supposed to be a gag order on these details, but the details were widely known earlier this week, and then were like a brush fire yesterday before Darren Revelle of ESPN went ahead and wrote a piece. And it, almost certainly, you would think part of the kickers and the bumpers in there includes how to handle Audible. So I don't know why nobody wants to handle this in an upfront basis or so forth, but whatever. Your impressions, Marty, of Baltimore before we talk about what's going on at Churchill, including the winning colors tomorrow. Certainly a unique summit and you know, apex to the week.
I mean, it was surreal. I've been to about 22 Preaknesses, something like that. And as you well know, I've spent a lot of time at Pimlico otherwise, writing for the Sun, and I could not recall them ever having had that kind of fog. I mean, I guess they did. I'm sure they have, but I mean, how timely or untimely was that, that it rolled in, you know, 2 hours before the Preakness, and just it it's something that none of us will ever experience again. I mean, in terms of the magnitude of the race combined with the eeriness of the weather. And my way of watching it, I don't know how everybody else did it, but I had 1 foot on a press box ledge where I could see him come down the stretch the first time. Then I ducked in and watched it on the NBC monitor, although the NBC feed was about 10 or 15 seconds behind the live running of the race. So when they turned for home on the NBC feed and you could still see who was where, and it looked like right then that Justify was getting the best of Good Magic. And then they straightened out, and here came some other horses, and I didn't know who they were, so I stepped back outside on the press box ledge and started watching with my binoculars. And here they came at the, you know, from the 8th pole to the 16th pole, and it was Justified with the lead, but two other horses, I still didn't know who they were. So it was just, you know, it was just so frantic and so unreal. And but on the replay, you saw Baffert watching it somewhere, and he was like holding his breath, and then yay, and you know, all hell broke loose because we all knew what was in store for us for the next 3 weeks. So there was not a lack of drama there, let's say that.
Very much. And it, for those that haven't seen, I recirculated Johnny D's recap, which is terrific. Johnny really you know, when Johnny, for those of you that are more used to hearing Johnny discuss the game and his views, Johnny's a fabulous writer. And
yeah, he is. He's really a great writer. No doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Underappreciated on that front. And read Johnny's piece about the element of, you know, hearing the gates open, hearing the bell and the gates, and then waiting. I was watching from just past the wire on that. You can't call it the first floor. It's really like a mezzanine. The ground floor is the first floor. Then there's the first and so forth. So it's the first floor, but it's the second. And it was just hysterical. I mean, you're waiting. You know they're coming. And then all of a sudden, as Johnny writes, the shadows started to form. And the first thing you saw both times, the first time past the wire and the second, was the white silks. And in fact, I said to Jimmy Barnes on Sunday, I said that was the easiest part was, you know, was seeing the white jacket.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I used to watch the Derby like that on the ground floor, where you'd see him come past the first time, and that this was before they had, this is in the 80s, before they had any kind of screen set up anywhere. So you were, and I don't want to do that anymore. So that's why I did it like that. I had to know what was going on at every point. So, I mean, to have tortured yourself by just watch him come by once and then wait for him and see what's going on the second time, I wasn't going to do that to myself.
Well, we will look forward to your coverage, Marty, on a daily basis, and appreciate you being out there. And I suppose Nicole Russo will pitch in as well as the week proceeds, and we'll go from there. Let's turn our attention to Churchill Downs. And before we talk about this weekend, a couple of notes from last week that I didn't have a chance to even deliver this week. It's been, you know, so heavily skewed toward Justify, but the Louisville handicap last Saturday, and Vittori Kin, Kenny McPeak, this is I got to be, how many times has he won the Louisville?
As Byron King, my colleague, wrote, he's now got one Louisville trophy, Louisville handicap trophy for every finger on one hand, so he's won it five times.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Pretty remarkable.
It is, and you know, this is right in his wheelhouse with a foreign, you know, with sort of a foreign-y kind of horse, mile and a half. And this was a nice performance. I mean, won well under Julian Leperoux. And a couple other things people might have missed over the weekend. How about Brendan Walsh? Honorable duty in that $100,000 style claimer on Sunday. And he seems to be ready for some advanced action. We'll see what Brendan's got in mind for him next.
Yeah, I think he's going to run the Foster, and I was trying to get my arms around the Foster a little bit yesterday, but it's just it's a little bit too early because we haven't heard of any big namers yet. So they closed the entries not until, what is today? It'd be a week from Saturday that they close the entries for the Foster, and actually the Fleur de Lis shaping up a pretty good race with Valadorna and Farrell and the filly of Neil Howard's that won the DuPont on Friday, Song of Spring. So we've at least got those three. So, you know, we're starting to get a little gauge on all these races. The Wise Dan also, that's on the Stephen Foster undercard. They're going to have five stakes, and it looks like World Approval. I texted Mark Cassie this morning. He's definitely going to point World Approval to the Wise Dan. So it's going to be a terrific card. The Saturday after the Belmont, June 16th, it's a night card, as it has been now for 6 or 7 years.
Well, and of course, we also had Graham Motion the other day to talk about Irish War Cry, and I think he's looking at Foster.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a little bit of a turn back. You know, that mile 316th was kind of an odd race. It seems like the front runners always seem to dominate, and once Irish War Cry got out on the lead, it was pretty much over. So it'd be interesting to see him turn it back a little bit to the mile and eighth, which isn't, you know, has a different kind of tempo to it. So I think that'd be a real good test for him, and it'd be a real good fit, actually.
Well, there's for those that haven't been paying attention, that was a good weekend of racing at Churchill, and a couple of notable performances, you know, sort of dotting the last few cards, including Wes Hawley with that Thirst for Life that won that allowance. Thirst for Life, okay, as well.
Yeah,
mid-90s.
Yeah, he's going to run the Foster, and so is the Wacom. So I think Wes is going to have two in the Foster.
Good for Wesley. That's great. That's great for him. Well, yeah. Mark, let's take a look. I can turn away the weekend. Let's turn to tomorrow. The Kirtana is going to go the mile and a half. And, of course, named for Proctor is a wonderful Glen Hill mare. And usually Proctor takes a shot at this, and he's got creative thinking this time, not for Glen Hill, but for Brary Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she'll be the second choice in there off of one other than Lynn at the end of Keeneland. This race has come up better before, Steve, honestly. I mean,
yeah.
You've got her and Lamantic Grease, but they're both going to be doing some chasing of Daring Justice, who's 4-5 on the line. I think she'll be shorter than that. I mean, you can tell when a stake isn't very good when they card it real early on the card, and this is race 3 of 11. So, I mean, it's pretty much the free square playing bingo in your early multis. That would be the early pick 4, races 1 through 4, and then the early pick 5, which is races 2 through 6. So it's like Mike Maker asked him about this mare in here, Daring Duchess. He said, well, I just hope it ends up on the racetrack as good as it looks on paper, because on paper it looks like she's, you know, 2-5-ish in there.
Well, in addition to the Kirtana, we look to the winning colors, and this group going to go 6 furlongs, of course, the Grade 3, 100,000, and a little curious, I thought, Marta, I mean, where are the filly and mare sprinters? Where are they hiding?
Well, I mean, last year this division, if you'll remember, was dominated by Finley's Lucky Charms. They had 3 filly mare sprint stakes at the spring meet last year, and she swept them all. And I wrote a little something from Brett Calhoun saying he's just going to probably wait for the Honorable Miss. It's in late July at Saratoga. There's really mm-hmm. nothing for her. He didn't want to run these races and kind of use her up because
yep.
obviously his target is the end of the year on November, I guess it'd be November 3rd with the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. So that's for Finley's Lucky Charm. So what we're left with here is Golden Mischief as a 2-1 morning line favorite. I thought for sure, Steve, she would be lower than that. I think even money's probably closer for her. Off that 101 buyer at Oaklawn, she's got kind of the back races to go to. And she was trained last year by Asmussen. Judmont bought her in November at auction, turned her over to Brad Cox, and he's really happy with how she came out of that last race at Oaklawn, and she's facing the 1-2 finishers in an opening night allowance, those being Miss Kentucky for Rusty Arnold and Treble for Ron Moquette. But I think if she runs her race, Golden Mischief will win, and she'll pay $420.
Well, in addition to the winning colors, that late sequence, there happens to be a good allowance right before it. If you're playing the late pick 5, if you're playing the late pick 4, I thought that 7-furlong group was worth looking at too, Mart. Honorable Treasure, you know, Ken McPeak has a you know, has that 3-year-old that seems to be slowly knocking on the door here. It's taken him a little bit longer to get going as a 3-year-old, I think, than they might have hoped. Asmussen, though, with the Winchell homebred, the Tappet Colt, Tap Master, won at First Asking, and I would keep an eye on what might be a late developing 3-year-old here. You got Bourbon County for Eddie Keneally, and Cassie and Mrs. Weber, super smart on the rail, seems in a little deep going into this.
Yeah, I bet they thought when they entered him, super smart, they thought, oh man, he's gonna be salty. But this race really came up tough. You know, he's a 3-year-old having to run against older, talking about super smart. But he was one of the favorites last fall in the street sense, didn't run very good, and they put him away, and he's evidently come back and worked real well. So, you know, maybe not tomorrow for Super Smart, but I think he's one to kind of keep tabs on as we go.
And the Nightcap, the 11th race, is an absolute kind of a last-chance derby in some cases. A bunch of good horses, it seems, on paper that just haven't broken their maidens. Whether they've run into monsters along the way or whatever has happened, it includes Fireball Shot, who's had a bunch of chances. This is Phil Bauer for Mr. Rigney, and this was a horse cut out to be a good one, and he does continue to improve, but he's taking his sweet-ass time doing it.
Well, I mean, if he runs second about 10 more times, he'll almost pay for himself.
But, exactly.
You know, I thought that when I first opened up this race, I thought that maybe Gray Now, because he ran a real good race on opening night, and I thought he might be a contender. But then the farther you go, there's a lot more to choose from here. So I think, you know, there's some sleepers in here. I guess Meistermind, who is the half to Minette Bird, and Dolahan, who pretty much refused in his debut here last fall, but Steve gave him some time after the fall, and he might be a sleeper. Maybe he's learned some lessons there, and 8-1 on the morning line, he'd be worth looking into. Number 8, Meistermind, in the Saturday finale.
Rush into the Circle, that race 2 back, that would win this race. You've got Elusive Hero for Ian Wilkes, who's come, you know, within a couple of lengths of breaking his maiden. You had Mozone, who caught Slop last time and clearly didn't care for it. Eddie Keneally. This is a really fun field, and it's amazing. You know, sometimes these maiden races, Mart, you get these at this time of year, and you'll have some 4-year-olds and some, you know, that missed time, and you'll have 3-year-olds, and you look at them, and you look and you say, nobody deserves to win. Then there's a field like this where there's a bunch of good horses here that have got careers to be had. It's really funny,
absolutely,
how that happens. Gray Nile can win this for Dale Romans.
Yeah, that's the horse I mentioned. So, you know, it's like, this is part, by the way, this is part of the single six. We had, they only bet 122,000 into it yesterday on the Twilight Thursday. And somebody, I guess somebody almost swept it, and it's up to 470 going into today because there were only 2 winning tickets last night with some prices in there. So, you know, the lower the handle, the more chance you got to win it by yourself. So there's fewer competition, obviously. So I think that the fans are kind of remiss in not betting more into it. And I would imagine that today, you know, again, with 470, the only bet, maybe 150 at the most, you know. And so if you can just sprinkle a shot in there or two, you got a chance at a lifetime score, the single six.
Well, Mart, we appreciate. I'm going to be looking forward to touching base. You're not coming to New York, huh?
I don't think I'm coming to New York. They asked me if I wanted to come. I said no, but I am going to the Indy 500 on Sunday. So first
that
time
boy.
I've been there. And Byron will cover for me Sunday morning, and Nicole's covering for me Monday morning. And, I'm going to go. I told you what Mike Berry said about the Indy 500, didn't I, with no mutual windows there to bet on?
No.
Mike Berry wrote, 2.5 miles of pavement, not 1 inch of action. So I used that on an Indianapolis radio station about 20 years ago, and it fell pretty flat. So
well, the I'm just curious. Speaking of flat, with Jim Nabors gone, are you singing Back Home Again?
Back Home Again.
Look at you, the Mr. Moonlight on the Wabash. It's see tremendous.
See you, buddy.
I'm not going to be able to continue. That was unbelievable. Oh. I love it. Marty McGee, everybody. DRF McGee, the best. Back after this, we'll go to Hong Kong. Pat Cummings joins us. They've got their last big race of the season at Shot 10. And we'll catch up with Pat as well. See if he's coming to New York. Pat's the type that shows up for, you know, he shows up for big racing anywhere. Back after this. Hour 2 at the races. Weekend preview.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.